Hi, I'm Kieran O'Donnell. Welcome to Business Matters. In today's podcast, I speak to a financial advisor who could be the vital link for people from Donegal and the Northwest recouping large sums of money lost on Spanish property. And as the country moves to level 3, I talk to Letterkenny gym owner Neil Barrett about getting his business up and running again after a second lockdown. A financial advisor from Cork is working in Spain for lawyers trying to recoup millions of euro of investors' money lost in Spanish property. David Daly says his team have thousands of Irish names and addresses on creditor sheets, but they don't have telephone numbers or email addresses to contact them. Quite a number of these investors, who are owed an average of 70,000 euro, are from Donegal and the Northwest. Time, however, is of the essence, and the deadline to get their money back is December the 31st, 2020. David began by telling me how he got involved with the company set up by a former work colleague, which operates on a no-one, no-fee policy.
I'm still working as a financial advisor, but a friend of mine who basically set up No Win No Fee Spain asked me to get involved a couple of months back just to help him, because we had so many people to contact and try and locate. He was just struggling because the deadline, unfortunately, is this, at the end of December this year, to get your claim in for off-plan premises. The guy who set up the company, Patrick Dean, and myself worked together in London 20 years back. We were financial advisors. We get financial advice, pension investment advice to footballers and TV stars and stuff like that. And Patrick subsequently went on to be a football agent, and a lot of his clients, a lot of footballers, lost money in Spanish property, which is why Patrick set up the company. First was to recoup the money for the footballers, and then he was so successful, he decided to sort of spread it to everybody else we could help. So that's where we are. How it works is, Kieran, is when we win a case in a development, we win compensation. 95% of the paperwork is more or less the same for the next person that needs to sue them as well. So it's just a case of filling in the blanks. So what we do is we apply for creditor lists from that particular development, and we get a list of everybody who lost money or was owed money from that site. Unfortunately, a lot of people that I've seen on these lists were Irish. And they probably weren't getting the same sort of attention as maybe the UK people were. It was highly, there was a lot of publicity about the 2015 ruling, which we'll go into more detail later. So I decided, look, as a last chance saloon, I'd contact a few radio stations and try and get this message out there as quick as I could before the deadline ended.
So the problem at the minute is you have a list, but you have no contact number or no emails.
That's correct. All we get is we get a name and we get an address. Now that address could be an old address. It could be from like somebody invested in 2000 or 2003, 2004. So what we do is I was brought in because I have a team of telemarketers that basically scour the internet trying to cross-reference names against directors, company's house, LinkedIn, Facebook accounts, stuff like that. Whilst we've had some success, we haven't hit as many people as we'd like to have hit. So I took it upon myself to just get the message out there through radio stations, and I really appreciate you letting me on today.
How have you found the reaction so far on the radio stations that you've spoken to, David?
Yeah, like I'll give an example. Today I spoke on Midlands Radio, and I had several phone calls from it. And one particular case, I won't tell you what town it is because I don't want to give anyone's business away, but one particular woman rang me, and 10 members of our family and friends had invested in a particular development in the Costa del Sol that basically went bankrupt. And none of them got any money back. And in the meantime, the last 2 or 3 hours, my solicitor in Spain has basically said, yeah, he can help them. And basically, we have enough paperwork basically for the guys to put in the claim. And they will get their money back. All of them, every one of them.
What sort of amounts of money are we talking about, David?
On average, there are about 60,000 to 70,000 Irish lost money in Spain over the last 20 to 25 years. Okay, the average amount being 70,000 euros, okay, which is a staggering amount of money, an absolute staggering amount of money. There is about 25 to 30 million owed to Spanish investors, to Irish investors in Spain. It's a really startling amount of money. And as I said, because before the 2015 Supreme Court ruling, a lot of people would have taken legal action against developers, against the insurance companies, against the bank guarantee schemes. Some people may have got some money back, but the majority didn't. Because once the developer went bust, you found that even though the guarantee he was promising or the guarantee he sold them never existed. But because of the 2015 ruling, where somebody brought a case because they felt that the banks should have protected the deposits and the stage payments, because the contract was never fulfilled with the developer, whilst the money was in the bank, it was under the protection of the bank. It should have been. And this is an old rule brought in by Franco in 1968, General Franco, and a very little known rule, which was challenged in the Supreme Court, and it was upheld. And therefore, after 2015, if you could prove that you paid the money to a developer and that developer put the money into the bank, then the bank were responsible for all monies after that. So that's the precedent that we're chasing. A lot of people are out there thinking, "Oh, I've already been to court, and I've lost." If you haven't been to court under the 2015 Consumer Protection Directive, then you still have a chance to get your money back.
Why is December the 31st, 2020, the cutoff point?
The reason, as you can imagine, a lot of banks weren't expecting this. Okay, so the banks ultimately are left carrying the can for all the developers that went bust in Spain over the last few years. Even banks that went bust were taken over by bigger banks. They're on the hook for anything that those smaller banks that went bust are on the hook for. So basically, the banks lobbied the government, and they said, look, we can't be responsible. We can't be paying out indefinitely. We can't have people popping out of the woodwork in 20, 30, 40 years' time. We need a specific date on this. We'll pay out, but we need a specific time limit on this. And the time limit was actually originally the 31st of October, but due to COVID, it was pushed back a couple of months. So it's the 31st of December 2020 is your cut-off point for off-plan compensation.
So what is your advice now, David, to people who feel that they may have a chance of getting back their money?
Okay. What I would say, obviously, look, we can help. But if you want to just check what I'm saying online, just check the 2015 Supreme Court ruling about the bank deposit scheme. Do that first. Check out our website, nowinnofeespain.com. And if you feel that you need some help or you need basically a bit of direction on this, my contact details will be left with you guys, and I'll be quite happy to take calls from anyone. Now, you might be asking yourself, are you guys running a charity or something? Absolutely not. The lawyers who spend a lot of money bringing these cases to court, they charge 25% of the compensation that is awarded. Okay, simple as that, plus VAT. So they get paid, but ultimately they have to outlay a lot of money to get it to court in the first place. Okay, so that's very, very transparent, but there's no money up front. There's absolutely zero money to be paid until the compensation comes through.
And you have good reason to believe that there are people from Donegal and the North West who are caught up on this?
Oh, absolutely, because I've seen lists with people all over Donegal and the North East and the North West, everybody, all corners and parts of Ireland, people are owed money. As I said, I've contacted as many radio stations. Luckily, I've had two come back to me. I wish the other guys would come back to me as well, because unfortunately, we can't do anything after the 31st of December of this year. But I know for a fact that there are people in Donegal that are owed lots of money in Spain.
You mentioned your friend there, the football agent.
Yeah.
Was he dealing with big names at that stage, David?
He was. We dealt with a lot of, back in the early 2000s and mid 2000s, we dealt with a lot of the bigger football guys. We can't obviously mention their names for as you can appreciate, but a lot of these guys would have lost big money. I'm talking the average Irish investor would have probably lost around 70,000. The footballers were in bigger developments, multi-million euro plots, and some of these guys were putting deposits down up to as high as half a million, 600,000 or 700,000.
And how far back does one need to go?
Technically speaking, you can go back as far. This ruling is a very blunt instrument. You can go back as far as you want, but ultimately where all the damage was caused was basically anywhere between the year 2000 up to, we say, the end of the financial crisis back in 2012, 2013. So that's where a lot of developments went bust. That's when a lot of the damage was done for investors. But it can go back as far as you want. Now, the good news is, Karen, that we've had cases where people have been awarded interest and charges from the day one that they put the deposit down. So if we had someone, for example, we had someone recently that basically bought in 2004, lost their money, and he was awarded interest and charges back up to 2020, which was, I think, roughly about 80 or 90% extra on top of his original award. So it can be quite substantial. So your 70 grand could easily turn into 120 grand or 130 grand. But it's all down to the judge you get on the day and what court you get. But ultimately, you know, what I say to people is, at this late stage in the day, if you have a contract for purchase and proof of the transfer of funds, we can do it quite quickly. If you're in a development where you can't find the contract or you got rid of your transfer payments, we can still help, but we need to hear from you sort of ASAP, because we can subpoena the courts, we can subpoena the liquidators, we can subpoena whatever banks were involved to get that information through. But we don't have much time to do it. So what I would say to you is, even if you're not sure whether you're owed money or not, please contact me and I'll let you know if you are.
Yeah. So obviously time is of the essence. Are you preparing yourself for a busy period now for the next 4 or 5 weeks?
Well, I tell you, I've actually, my own job as a financial advisor, I put on hold till January, because I just want to get this done. So I've committed myself for the next 3 or 4 working weeks, that whatever's left, to basically getting as many people as I can through the process.
So hopefully it could be a happy ending to what's been a trying year for many.
Well, what I'd be hoping is, Ciarán, that at the end of the year, I'd like to be able to come back to you and say, look, due to your interview and you taking the time to talk to me, we have X amount of people in line to receive X amount of money back. And that's just a great news story for your listeners, especially in the worst year of all time, I'd imagine, you know.
David, it's been great talking to you. Listen, we'll come back to the story in the new year, David, and I wish you well with your endeavours. And that was David Daly. For those looking to contact David, his telephone number is 00-353-87-703-6667. And he can be contacted by email on david@noonenofeespain.com. That's david@noonenofeespain.com. The move from Level 5 to Level 3 restrictions on Tuesday, December the 1st, means that gyms, leisure centres and swimming pools can reopen. I caught up with Neil Barrett, owner of Fit Hub in Letterkenny, as he prepared to reopen the doors of his gym for a second time.
Didn't think we'd have to open up a second time, but it is what it is.
How frustrating and disappointing was it to have to lock down a second time back in October, Neil?
Yeah, incredibly frustrating. Understandable why the country and businesses in general had to lock down. You get it by the numbers, the increase, especially in Donegal. Our numbers were incredibly high. Very frustrating from a business point of view in terms of gyms, because the transmission rate was so low in gyms and we thought that we might just squeeze away with it, but we didn't. So, I mean, I just know, just from kind of liaising and talking with the local gym owners and coaches locally, everybody that I know was doing their part locally, and we had a pretty great impact on keeping the numbers down. Like, we hadn't a single positive case in the gym over the almost 12 weeks we reopened after lockdown number one. So it was incredibly frustrating from a gym perspective. But on the kind of grander scale of things, it is what it is. Every business had to do their part. Every individual had to do their part. So you just roll with it and go with it.
You've taken a lot of precautions, Neil, and the gym has been totally transformed. Can you talk to me about the measures you took to open up after the first lockdown?
Yeah, so originally we had, we have a very big open space here. I mean, when you take the whole facility into consideration, it's almost 12,500 square feet. So it's a huge space. Originally, we would have had a much higher capacity of numbers. So we had to reduce those by around 35-40% on average. Even though we didn't have to, because we have such a huge space, we still did, just to make sure. So instead of giving an average of 2 metres social distancing, we aimed for 4. So we went above and beyond in that respect. We used to have a back area that was half a yoga studio and then half a personal training area. And we knocked the whole thing through into one big studio. So we renovated that during the first lockdown and we turned it into one massive studio. So it's now 12 by 12 metres squared. Now that we still had to reduce the capacity of people in that room. So we can't put any more than 15 people in that room. Whereas before, we would have had 18 and half the size, probably about a metre between each person. So we had to almost half that, but we doubled the size of the room, so it allowed us to do that. Now, in saying that, when we compare, we've always used online booking, and that was a need in the industry going forward after the first lockdown, where people were encouraged to have a booking system or at least a contact tracing system. We didn't have an issue there. We've always had a booking system. Just from an administrative set of things, it makes it much, much easier. So, I mean, in terms of keeping restrictions very rigid and the amount of people who are coming in, we didn't really face any difficulties there because we already had these things in place beforehand. cleaning, I mean, God, the amount of costs on wipes and detergents and blue roll. You'd be absolutely shocked how much blue roll costs whenever you're going through. We go through an average of about 6 or 8 rolls a day. So when you add up all the cost of things and the measures, it's quite expensive and quite nightly.
What time does your gym open, Neil? And you talked about how much cleaning equipment you go through. What's going to be a typical day now when you get back up and run this week?
So we open at 6 a.m. and we'll close the doors usually around 9:30 at night. Now we're very quiet through the middle of the day from about 12 until 4:30. That's kind of the downtime and the changeover between coaches. So we have a morning group and an evening group of coaching staff. So we'll get through a minimum of 3, but usually around 5 classes in the morning between 6 a.m. and 12 p.m. And then we have another at least 5, usually 6 classes in the evening from 4:30 until around 8:30 or 9. Because we have the studio, the big studio in the back, we can actually run 2 classes at a time, which is a great benefit now post-lockdown, I suppose. That would be the silver lining of all of this, is that it's forced us to change the way we do things. Where we would have had ideas before about how we would do things, this forced your hand. You had no choice. So we were able to, we had to decrease capacity of numbers, obviously, but we increased the amount of classes. So when we look at our booking system for the last 6 years, the almost 12 weeks post lockdown number one was actually the busiest we have ever been in 6 years. So I think that just shows you how much frustration there was with individuals and clients. Now, I know the weather was good. There was an increase in people walking and, you know, increase in people being physically active because of the weather and because of the downtime. But there was also an increase in alcohol consumption, a decrease in quality of sleep, an increase in body fat percentage among people. So I think they missed that socialization. So just the numbers of people coming back after lockdown number one was just, it was huge. I've never seen numbers like it, which was very positive. So I think this has forced everybody just to take a look at their general health.
You mentioned the space. You were very lucky here in terms of having the ability to develop and expand.
Oh yeah, hugely. I mean, we've, even though the facility is that 12,500, we gave up around 2,500-3,000 to No Barriers a couple of years ago to run their new rehab facility in conjunction with JT Physio. It's a non-for-profit charity, so we helped them by allowing them use the facility throughout the day. But then they got much busier and needed a unit of their own. So we actually gave them one of the units next door to us to use for that. And then out the back, we had another 1,600 square feet lying empty. It was basically a storage space. And that's now been developed by JT for his reformer Pilates school. So we've been very, very lucky to have that abundance of space for so long. And even the main floor is 6,000 square feet. You know, I think we lucked out. And even looking back in 2014, we were just coming out the back end of a recession. We were in a unit that was less than 2,500 square feet in 2013, and people thought I was mad. They said, are you off your head going to that size of a unit and you've only got like 100 people? And I thought, well, space is king. You're better looking at it than looking for it. And I think we had the ability to fill it. Now, it took us nearly 6 years in a pandemic, but we finally did it. Right.
Just going back to the start, Neil, where did the brainwave come to set up the business you have now?
I suppose it came at college. So actually myself and one of my closest friends is Johnny Lohry, who owns JT Physio. We didn't do so well at school, let's be honest. We enjoyed ourselves a bit too much, the social side of things. So maybe didn't score the highest points in the Leaving Cert. But a couple of years later, after kind of realizing our mistakes of not focusing that much when we were younger, we decided to go back to school. So we went to Northwest Regional College in Lima Valley, and every day on the bus, we were driving up. Johnny always wanted to do physio, and I did as well originally. And we talked about making this amazing facility that had everything under one roof, a hub. Now, that's kind of originally where the name Fit Hub came out of. And this was kind of just a dream of what we were going to do. So we did our 2 years in Limavady. We both then got into Jordanstown. I opted to go with the sports science because I wanted to work as an S&C coach. And Johnny followed on with the physio. So it was always kind of a goal of mine, because looking at gyms and facilities, both locally, regionally and nationally, they all ticked a few boxes, but none of them ticked all the boxes. And I could see there was a change coming in terms of the type of training people were looking to get into. It was much more strength and conditioning based and strength based and less classes and commercial gym type stuff. So classically, you would have had like aerobics and spinning and Zumba and, you know, body pumping things. And then you would have had your commercial gym, but there was nothing to merge or marry the both of them. And I saw a massive niche there. So then when I finished my degree in sports science in Jordanstown, I went and did my master's in nutrition. I kind of fell in love with the nutrition side of things there. My goal was to become a dietitian, so I studied dietetics, but didn't do the placement to turn me into a dietitian, essentially. So fast forward 2008, 2009, I think it was, I graduated with my master's in nutrition and there was zero jobs, especially locally. Like there was only two gyms in Letterkenny. There's now nearly 20. So I uprooted, moved to Dublin. I thought, right, where does everything happen? It happens in Dublin. If I want to see what the market is like and what the rest of the country is ultimately going to look like in a few years' time, then I need to go to the big city where things are happening at a rapid pace. So I moved to Malahide. I lived there for about 3 or 4 years. I got to work under the Irish S&C team. I got to watch how the Italian rugby teams like Aston Villa would come over in the summer for camps. I got to watch these amazing S&C coaches. I got to see how the gym culture was transforming, and especially the kind of conception of CrossFit waving in from the US around 2010. I fell in love with CrossFit. Not so much the actual training itself, but more the methodology and the message and the brand. And I thought, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it now and I'm going to do it right. So I moved home in 2013. I sold everything that I had. I have a really nice car that I saved up and bought, and I sold it and I opted for an old Opel Astra van. It was terrible. And I pumped everything into enough equipment to get me a boot camp going. So I started a boot camp at the community centre. Gavin Walker actually came along and helped me. He was studying in the IT at the time and big into CrossFit. We both trained in Derry, and another guy called Kevin Boylan Jr. And we went to the community centre down to Liam and said, can we hire the community centre at 6 a.m. on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday? He says, yeah, no problem. We split the profits with them 50-50. And on day one, 52 people showed up. And that was the beginning of it. 6 weeks later, I had a unit in Glencar, 2,500 square feet.
Were you surprised at the crowd the first day?
Oh, I couldn't believe it. And this is kind of pre-social media, really. Like, Facebook was a thing, but it wasn't a huge thing.
Did you know at that stage that you're on a winner?
Yeah. When I saw 50-odd people show up, because we had no feedback, we had no way of knowing how many people were going to show up. And then on the morning, we were sitting nervously outside at 5:45. And this is kind of April in 2013. And just all these cars came out of nowhere, and there was queues of people. It actually took us nearly 20 minutes to get everybody checked in and paid for. We just charged a fiver a class, and it went from there. We used the people that showed up to be the basis of the foundation of CrossFit. I knew I was going to open it, and this was just like a lead-in to that. So they became the first 50 members. We sold out our first 4 weeks. We started with 12 classes a week. That doubled 24 within 6 months. Within a year, I saw we were outgrowing the place. So I went looking, and I came up here to Gavin Bowe, the Bowe family here in the mountaintop. I've known the family for many, many years, and they're a great bunch to work with. So I knew that it was the right kind of relationship to build. And he was very kind of forthcoming, very welcoming, and gave me a big break at the start in terms of renting that because the size of the place. And I just said to him, listen, if you can give me a chance to do this, we'll sign into a long-term lease and we'll build upon that. So he took a big punt on me, in fairness. Everybody did. So yeah, 2014, almost a year to the day when we opened CrossFit Letterkenny, we moved up here. I could see that the CrossFit brand, it was getting a little bit too competitive. There was a lot of, I suppose, negative media around injuries and, you know, being too extremist. And it's not really, like, it depends on what way you take it. So we started to kind of navigate away from the brand itself and then break it down into more types of classes, things that people enjoy. We're looking at, okay, why do people get enjoyed and involved in activity? And the main reasons, the research shows, is fun, social interaction, and then obviously results. So we started FitHub, and that was just fun, engaging, results-driven classes. And we've evolved that now over the last 5, kind of 6 years since we've been here in the mountaintop. We've got 5 different programs now that kind of cater to every, I suppose, need and want within the industry. Some people like cardio. We have a cardio class. Some people just like weights. We have a weights class. Some people like a mix. We've got that. Some people like to come in and get their ass kicked for an hour a day. We've got a class like that. And then some people like to chill and stretch and do yoga, and we've got that. So I think the overall goal from when I was sitting on that bus driving up every morning with Johnny talking about designing a facility that had everything, that was the goal. And now on our left, we have a neuro rehab facility for people with spinal injuries, stroke and MS, which is fantastic. And a lot of those people actually jump into class now with their able-bodied, which I've never seen before. And it's incredibly kind of inspiring to watch. And then you've got Johnny opening up his Reformer Pilates studio upstairs at the back. So that ticks that box. You've got yoga, cardio, high intensity, moderate intensity, strength only. It's just a hub. Everything you could possibly desire in fitness is under one roof. And that was the goal. When I traveled around the country, I was lecturing all around the country while I was living and working in Dublin. And I could see that every gym collectively was getting it right, but individually they weren't quite getting it right. So I just, from all the gyms and facilities I traveled to, I looked at, okay, what are the best things about this place? Where do they make the most money? Where do they have the most enjoyment, engagement, and numbers and classes? And then I just took all the good elements of what I saw and brought it and put it into one facility. That's pretty much the conception and evolution of FitHub.
And coming to the gym, it's not about walking in, doing your exercise and walking out the door again. There's a much more come-together experience now with all that, Neil, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it was actually a guy that I know I used to kind of be involved with in Dublin, and Bray, who termed the phrase social fitness. And I'm going to plagiarise that and use it for ourselves. So it's social fitness. Again, when we look, I suppose this is where I come from, is more the evidence and the research, because my day job is teaching, and then the gym is a passion. And what we find in the evidence and the research is that, why do people get involved in activity? And for many years, it was so results-driven, trying to get lean, trying to get fit, trying to get, you know, Instagram model shape. And that's not really what the vast majority of people want. People want somewhere to go where there are people that they enjoy hanging out with, banter, crack, engaging. Because for a lot of people, even pre-COVID, the gym was their outlet. You know, we have a population of people that can, at the main age between 25 to 45 or 25 to 50. And they're professionally driven. You know, they've got a good bit of disposable income. You know, they're good jobs, they're well educated. And that was our target market. And with that comes, with that professionalism and that academic qualification, comes usually quite demanding and stressful jobs. So we know they don't have a lot of time. So they're not out in the pub every Friday, Saturday night, catching up with friends and socializing. And they don't have time because most of them are parents, and you know, they've got a lot of duties outside of work and home. So we wanted to make it that we tick two boxes. So you're getting your fitness, but you're getting fun, you're getting enjoyment, and you're also getting the social element. And to be honest, I would say, and it's not to be biased towards FitHub, but in terms of socially engaging, there's nowhere like it. We designed the place like that. As soon as you walk in, there's a coffee dock. You know, there's couches and benches. Obviously not now with COVID, we have to restrict that, but pre that there was. So, I mean, it wouldn't be out of people's character to come in at 4:30, 5 o'clock on a Monday to Friday evening and not leave here until 8:30. We have people who are here for 2 or 3 hours. Now, obviously, they don't have a lot of outside priorities and kids and that, but they would come in, they'd drink 2 or 3 coffees, they jump into one class, maybe 2 classes, they'll hang out and stretch and roll, and, you know, they'll even go across the road to Kelly's and have maybe some something to eat, and they meet up at the weekends, they go for walks and runs and cycles and swims, and the odd time, probably more often than they should, weekends then going out drinking and going to parties and things. But it's that balance.
Talking about parties, we are probably coming into the party season, Neil, obviously as a year with a difference. It's going to be a December with a difference too, because with the gym about to be open again, there's going to be a big demand for the gym, and people, instead of maybe going the party route, it's going to be train route, and it's going to be a quieter Christmas than you've ever had before.
Yeah, it's going to be a quieter Christmas for their socialising, for sure. I mean, they're just limited. They don't have the opportunity or the option to do it. Now, they can do the house parties, but I think everybody's quite responsible in terms of the way they're doing things. And I'd say that'll carry on throughout the December months. But yeah, we're going to be out the door. I've no worries about that at all. Even when I looked at the booking app for this week, everything is fully booked. There's not a space to be had in any of the classes. And this is the 1st of December, and classically that would be more of a wind down when party season starts. So people are making up for the lost time. But to remember as well, we've had almost 8 months of no gym activity at all. And there's a lot of making up to be done. And there's no nightclubs. And we have a shadow of the former pubs that we have. So this is going to be, for a lot of people, their social outlet for the next maybe 6 to 8 months until the country is vaccinated and immune. So I would envisage that not just this gym, all gyms in general, are going to be incredibly busy for the next 6 to 8 months.
How did you and how did your members cope with the 2 lockdowns, Neil?
I suppose lockdown number one, we didn't go online. Now, we did have a class every day for people who wanted to jump on. And again, what we do here is very different. It's incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to replicate online because of the social interaction. And I'm sure everybody is aware that you can socially interact virtually online, but it's just not the same. There's something about being in the presence of other people that is just comforting, both physically and emotionally. And doing it online just doesn't do the same thing. So I didn't really want to go down the online route, because if I can't replicate what we do here, then I'm not going to charge for it in any way, shape or form. So in lockdown number one, we gave out a lot of equipment to members and let them do their own thing. We put up a daily program every day for people to follow. And then we had an online check-in system with our app that they could post up how they get on in terms of reps and times and scores. We had a lot of interaction online, both in terms of our staff. We would catch up maybe once a week or once a fortnight and have a few drinks and have the crack and just to stay engaged there. But a lot of our members had already developed a lot of relationships with each other. So they just kind of naturally did that. It was organic. We didn't have to force it. And then that was kind of the worry, that we didn't have a lot of contact with members, although we tried to. But it was like over 4 months, nearly 5 months, very hard to keep everybody engaged at that. But when we reopened, they were very, like, they were just in the door. The place was mobbed from day one, and it was like we were never closed. Lockdown number two, we tried to do a lot of running and walking. So 3 days a week, I organized programs for people to go and meet up in their family bubbles or whatever. A lot of them either live together or are very close friends, so they were okay to engage with each other. So we put up a recovery run on a Tuesday. They would go and do the hill session on a Thursday, and then they go and do a kind of a structured session on a Sunday. And that seemed to work quite well. The coaches all had keys to the gym, so they just come up and did their own thing in their own time. I didn't come near the place. I'm incredibly unfit and very, very sore and tired from not doing anything, so I'm looking forward to getting training again. And I think the numbers of people coming back in is a reflection of how enjoyable what we do here is, because there was a fear about a lack of engagement with people outside of it. But to be honest, I think the goal during lockdown was just to survive it, just to come out the other end in the healthiest and happiest form possible. And they didn't need too much extra to make that happen. I think people enjoyed the downtime. They enjoyed the family time. A lot of DIY and gardening and painting fences, I'm sure, was done. So I think it was a chance for people to reconnect with each other on that level and kind of get out of the rat race a little bit. So when I saw the end of the first lockdown and just the amount of people that came back and were so encouraged to get back training and back to the gym, I had no fear about the second one. It's just a formality. We have to close our doors for 6-8 weeks now at this stage. We reopened them. The place is fully booked. And I don't see us closing again, to be honest.
And finally, what does 2021 hold for Neil Barrett and FitHub LK?
Oh, FitHub, we've got a couple of projects in mind to try and make use of the time throughout the day where the gym is closed between 12 and 4. I suppose we can't really improve that much in what we're doing. We'll always improve. We'll always make small kind of superficial changes to things. But in terms of the program and the way we run things and just the product or service that we sell, I'm genuinely quite happy with it. Like one of our coaches here, Paul, says, always happy, never satisfied. That's the kind of mantra we live by. Like, we're always happy with what we're doing, but if we can find improvements, we will. There's a couple of small things we'll do to the gym and in terms of our programs that we'll improve on. The goal is just to maintain numbers, try and keep the same volume of people that are coming in, and not just keep them coming in, but keep them happy and make sure that the level of service is as high as it's always been. And it's ticking the moral boxes, not just the money coming in and the money going out. We have a very moral and ethical way of doing things, and I think we need to hold on to those characteristics of what we do. In terms of me, well, I actually have a new manager in here because I just don't have the time to give to the gym as I used to, because I recently started lecturing full-time. Well, recently I've been doing it for 6 years in the IT, part-time for 4, so this is my second year full-time now. And that's really been my passion for a long time. I've been teaching since 2010, but it's always been a goal of mine to become a full-time lecturer, a full-time educator. So as well as full-time lecturing, I'm also doing a second master's in learning and teaching, and the Malt Master of Arts in Learning and Teaching in the OIT. So I'm halfway through that because I just want to improve as a teacher. So I have to get that finished by next year. We're also trying to launch the Northwest Sports Lab in the OIT. And that's, the OIT is now going to turn into a technological university in the next year. So we have so many projects down below that most of my time personally has been invested in that, because I treat that like my job. And then Liam McBride, who's fantastic, he's taken over from me here. He's almost as OCD about things as I am, and that's exactly what I need. And he's able to keep the ship afloat here and keep the standards as high as they were whenever I was here full-time. And to be honest, in some cases, much better. He's very well organized. So I have no worries there. When I step away into the OIT, I can put myself, my heart and soul, 100% into that job and have little to no worries about what's happening here in Vitobe.
Neil Barrett, thanks for joining us on Business Matters.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for this edition of Business Matters. I'd like to thank my guests, David Daly and Neil Barrett. Thanks to Kenneth Wilson on sound. And thanks to you for listening. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, drop an email to businessmatters@highlandradio.com.